And welcome to another edition of Odyssey Radio Show. We talk about ancient mysteries, metaphysical topics, and non-corporate, unfiltered news of the day. So today we're going to tackle a pretty mysterious subject, the subject of chemtrails. And I have a guest who's been researching this topic for years. Her name is Courtney Scott. Welcome to the show.
Oh, welcome. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, great. I know you've been really looking at this from many different angles. Why don't we start with a basic definition? Why don't you talk about what a chemtrail is versus a contrail?
Well, the main difference is that a contrail is formed from condensed steam. It's a vapor trail, and it happens at very high altitudes, say 30,000 feet, when the cold air meets the hot engine exhaust, and that creates a white trail that usually dissipates within a matter of seconds, like the trail behind a boat, the wake behind a boat.
Sure.
And a chemtrail, what we call a chemtrail, is one that persists for hours, can often be seen at much lower altitudes where the air is not that cold, and therefore you wouldn't normally see contrails at that height. And there's other characteristics of the chemtrail as opposed to the contrail.
So basically, they linger in the sky all day long, and they turn into clouds, right?
Exactly. And they also have other physical characteristics that I've noticed, and one of them is they tend to have nodules, which are pretty much evenly spaced across the length of the chemtrail, which can span an entire horizon. And they kind of look like, it's hard to describe, but they kind of drip off of these nodules. Too bad this isn't TV. I could show a picture, but a normal contrail that I've observed for many years doesn't have that physical characteristic.
I see. Now, let's go back to the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Were there any reports from these decades of chemtrails, or is this a relatively
new phenomenon? Not that I know of.
Phenomenon?
I don't know of any. I'm a photographer.
Right.
And so I've been observing this guy for many, many years, and I have never seen them, and the first year I saw them was 1998.
Yeah, I'm wondering if anyone's produced a picture from, like, the 1960s of chemtrails. You know, I haven't seen it.
Not to my knowledge. The only thing I do know about is a book called Clouds of Secrecy, mm-hmm. which you might have heard about. Now, that was an experimental weather program done, I believe, in the 50s.
I'm not aware of that book now.
Yeah, Clouds of Secrecy. But it was a program that was, I believe, taken before a congressional hearing and exposed, but that was pretty much the end of it. And this book is sometimes hard to find.
Was
but
that
I did
the
hear
seeding
about
of
it.
The clouds to produce rain?
It wasn't just seeding of clouds. It was an actual experimental weather program, and it
mm-hmm.
did sicken a lot of people in a certain area of this country. And unfortunately, I don't remember this specific geographic area, but
mm-hmm.
the book is, you can check out the book. I mean, you can do an investigation and find the book.
See, that's what a lot of people don't realize is we have a corporate-owned media, so they don't report those types of stories.
Oh, no, nothing about chemtrails. And anything about chemtrails that does filter through the media is going to be highly biased and, you know, it's just not going to be displayed as fact. It's going to be marginalized and criticized. So, yeah, you're not going to get the truth about chemtrails on that. At least you haven't yet.
No. Now, my understanding was the Discovery Channel was just about to do a special on the subject, and it was pulled at the last minute.
Right. That's my understanding, though. A couple of people have seen it. Perhaps it was shown in regional areas of this country. And there was one particular email I saw from a naturopath who said he did see it, and it was a complete and total snow job. They didn't even present a lot of the facts about this phenomenon. They focused on certain areas and basically tried to portray it as a conspiracy theory.
I see. Okay, now let's go back to 1997, 98. What do you think occurred from your research around that time?
Well, that's when the program seemed to kick in high gear, as far as I can tell. And one point I want to make right now, since I remember it, I was at the Environmental Law Conference this weekend in the University of Oregon. mm-hmm. and a presenter talked about global warming, and he said the five hottest years since 1890 began in 1998.
Really?
So I think that's very...
what a coincidence.
Yeah, I think that's more than a coincidence, because basically what these chemtrails seem to be doing, from all accounts, is heating up the atmosphere. Rather than deflecting the sun's rays, they seem to be trapping them and creating more of a heat layer than otherwise. So it's almost like it's creating more global warming.
Now let's get into the different theories about why chemtrails are being created. Let's go through the whole global warming theory.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the depopulation theory. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, I think all of those theories could be true at some point. Now, I want to mention someone I found to be a very good source is Scott Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
He's a former weatherman for ABC, and he's now retired from that. But he gave up his career to investigate this phenomenon.
Good.
And he did. And basically, what he's saying is that he feels it is a major program to create poverty in this country, perhaps worldwide. It's an economic, in other words, there's economic factors behind it.
Uh-huh.
And so his theory is that. And also, what I meant to tell you is he's saying that the chemtrails can be used to either cool or warm the atmosphere.
I see.
So it really depends on what the program's intentions are, possibly from day to day or month to month.
So the theory is it will make people sick and dependent on the government.
Well, it could actually, the worst case scenario is it could actually make a lot of people die.
Right.
And by controlling the weather, that's mainly where he's coming from. He's, a chemtrail researcher, but mainly he researches weather modification. And for instance, he said Hurricane Katrina was a manipulated situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you do that in certain areas, as we know, in very low-income areas in New Orleans, you basically get rid of those neighborhoods. They are not being restored, and the people that live there are not really able to move back into them. Instead, they're going to be developed as high-income property for perhaps casinos or other developments.
It's hard to tell because we just don't have a free press in this country that can investigate this and really dig into it.
Well, that's where we have to rely on ourselves. We have to rely on investigators like Scott, who is a professional meteorologist, and Clifford Carnicom, who is a scientist. People who have some background in the scientific world to give us some insight.
Now, if people want to see pictures of chemtrails, of course, they can type that into a search engine.
Yes.
And the really good websites are chemtrailcentral.com is good, right?
Right, and Carnicom.com.
Carnicom.com,
yeah, that's Clifford Carnicom's site.
Rents.
And Weather Wars, Rents.com. But Rents covers quite a few subjects.
Exactly.
These websites I'm telling you about cover basically only the weather and the chemtrail. And the other one I wanted to mention is weatherwars.info.
Weatherwars.com? .info?
No,
okay.
weatherwars.info.
Okay.
Yeah.
So have the substances and chemicals been analyzed in the chemtrails, and what kind of substances are in them?
Well, what's been analyzed by different methods, rainwater testing is one of them, aluminum and barium. And I believe there was another electromagnetic part of barium, strontium. But, these are things that I think people should really look into themselves, because I haven't done the testing myself.
Right.
So I think those who've done the testing, they should check out those specific websites and look at it for themselves. And
absolutely.
The other one I want to mention is CaliforniaSkyWatch.com.
Okay.
That's Rosalind Peterson's website, and she's someone who used to work with the Department of Agriculture.
Right.
And she's very concerned about the dying off of the trees and the danger to our crops, because these are getting into the soil, and, you know, really wreaking havoc with our food crops.
Now, there was a congressman a few years ago who did try to tackle the subject in a bill, wasn't there?
Yes, that is Representative Dennis Kucinich. And I just saw recently on another email that Representative Ron Paul from Texas was also looking into this. Now, I have to check that out. I haven't investigated his findings on it yet. But that would be really interesting if he is, because he is a Republican. And
he's running for president.
Is he? That I didn't know.
Yes, he is. Oh, yes, he is.
Huh. And you know, there's another thing about the mainstream press, because that's not widely known, is it?
No. they're reporting John McCain over and over, the same people.
Yeah, and Rudy Giuliani. Yeah.
Yeah, the press really focuses on their candidates, you know, the corporate ones. But
Paul
is running. Yeah, sure.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, and he's bringing light to a lot of subjects, like the Federal Reserve and many other issues. So
and he was against the war, too.
My understanding is Kucinich had the language chemtrail in a bill, and it was taken out of the bill.
Right, yes. It was the Space Preservation Act, and it was to eliminate all harm to our environment that exists in space. That would include, you know, Star Wars and all those other programs. And it did specifically say chemtrails. And I did have the opportunity to interview Mr. Kucinich, and he said yes. The chemtrails are real, and that they are still included in the bill, even though the language has changed.
I see. So is it being sprayed mostly in cities? Is it concentrated, or is it all over in rural country areas? Or?
Well, I don't know the concentration, so I can tell you I've been in a lot of different parts of the country, including small towns in Kentucky, and I've seen it there just as heavy as I've seen it here. And I've seen it. I was recently on the ocean this weekend, and I saw it there. So I think the idea that it's just controlling global warming, that kind of puts a lie to that, because why would they need to spray over the ocean other than maybe to guide the, the currents?
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about.
Well, it's hard for people to fathom, because it's such a massive project to spray the whole world. That's what people just can't understand. How could this be? You know.
Well, it's all we can do is look up and see it. I mean, you have to use your own eyes as evidence.
Right.
And people have reported this from all over the world.
That's
and especially, I believe,
other countries.
Yeah, I think especially in NATO countries, as far as I remember, the reports are coming. Yeah. Though a friend of mine moved to Costa Rica, for the specific reason to get away from this, because it was harming his health. And he was down there a couple of years, and they started spraying down there. And I don't believe Costa Rica is part of the NATO alliance.
I see. It's an independent.
Yeah.
So, you know, is there any sense of who's flying these planes? Is it NASA or the Air Force? Have they been identified?
Well, I know certain airplanes have been identified as military tanker jets. But also, I believe commercial jets are being used as well. I think it's, you know, probably many types of airplanes are being used at this point. It might have started out as just the military tanker jets, but it's more widespread, and therefore they probably have to use more planes.
Has any pilots who participated in this program come forward and talked about it, or is it total secret?
Well, not to me, but you can read reports about it on William Thomas's site. He has reports from, I believe, air traffic controllers up in Canada, and I think there was one that did talk about it on the East Coast. So Will Thomas's site, I believe, is lifeboatnews.com.
That's a good one.
You can check that out.
And it's hard, because when they talk, they generally lose their job, as do television.
Well, they have to speak with anonymously. They're not using their real names. So then again, people will say, well, you know, they're not using their real names, so we can't trust it. But, yeah, you're right. They would be risking losing their jobs, maybe more. We don't know what else they'd be risking.
Exactly. Now, we're talking from Portland, Oregon, and there's quite a bit of spraying up here. And I've noticed last summer that there were actually rings around the sun. Do you know about this phenomenon?
Oh, yeah, sun dogs. Those have been quite frequent that I've seen them. And a sun dog can be a naturally occurring event, but mm-hmm. the frequency of them is something very different. They have been occurring much more often in not related to the usual reason for a sun dog. So, I mean, that is another very strange phenomenon. And you'll see these kind of greasy-looking colors striping the clouds, too. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
And some of the chemtrails are black sometimes, and they spray at night as well.
They do spray at night. I've noticed the shadow. I haven't seen the black chemtrails, but I've seen a long shadow cast by the chemtrail because they're so dense and thick.
Okay, maybe it's a shadow, right.
It's a shadow. I'm probably seeing the shadow, yeah.
Okay, now there is a device made of copper called a chemtrail buster. Are you aware of these?
No, I'm not. I don't know
okay.
about that.
We want to give some good news out, too. But
right.
apparently there's a way of busting them or breaking them up, and people can go online and type in chemtrail buster.
Right.
They
can get a lot of. There's a lot of innovation from people, so mm-hmm. that's always good. The human spirit finds a way to solve things. But I want to mention, since that email about the Discovery Channel was from a naturopath, that naturopathic methods are available for cleaning up and preserving your immune system. So I would recommend that above all else because, you know, we don't know what else we're being inundated with in addition to the chemtrails. So the chemtrails
are... Do
you know
what supplements they talk about taking? Or?
Well, they just take... They talk about a lot of different ones. It's something everyone should investigate for themselves.
Capsaicin, red pepper.
What is it?
Capsaicin, red pepper.
Huh.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Pills. That's what I've read on some websites, but I don't know either. People have to find out for themselves.
They have to find out because it's very important at this time. And they're heavy metals. So you really want to go and find out about how to get rid of the heavy metals in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And there are
right.
different ways to do that.
And what type of illnesses are being reported? I mean, do you sense that Alzheimer's is connected to this?
Oh, yes, I do. Well, anything with aluminum is going to be connected to it. We've already proven that. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is a sharp increase in memory issues with people. But upper respiratory illness, asthma in children is taking a big jump. I think flu-like symptoms. A lot of people are sick for longer periods of time than you would normally get from the flu, and then they seem to get it back. Within a few weeks, they'll get it back.
Ongoing.
It's ongoing,
and
yeah.
Do you have any sense of how this is damaging the crops? And you would think farmers would be up in arms about this because they would notice chemtrails more, I would think, in a smaller town.
You know, I would think too, but Rosalind Peterson is a good source for that. But I do know that you can look at pictures online on California Skywatch and see the dying trees. I'm also curious about the bees that have been dying or been leaving their nests recently. I just read a whole article about that from The Independent, which I believe is a BBC, or not BBC, a British newspaper.
Yes.
And they were talking about these bees that are mysteriously disappearing. So I'm wondering if that's a result of this aerial spraying.
Well, if nature is being tampered with, there's a domino theory that we don't know what it will affect.
Exactly. And without bees, you know, you're going to destroy crops, too. Bees are very important for pollination. So,
right. The basic law, my understanding of the Constitution, is that you cannot modify the weather without the consent of the public.
Exactly. Informed consent, right.
And I don't know the exact language, but that's part of the Constitution.
Right. So it's illegal. What they're doing is illegal.
It's illegal. So,
however,
yes?
Oh, I was going to say, however, I haven't tracked this recently, but as far as I know, there's a House bill to create a weather modification test trial in California.
So then they can do it legally.
They're trying to. As far as I know, it hasn't passed yet. But it was on a fast track. That's the last I read about it. And so that's something worth looking into, because you might want to check that out and call your representatives and tell them, no, you would like more information and have to have some oversight and accountability for weather modification programs. So my feeling is, if they start this weather modification program, it's a way of Trojan horsing in the chemtrails and saying, well, yes, this is part of our experimental weather program, and it's to stop global warming, or whatever their reasoning is going to be.
You would think that would be the official reason, is that it's shielding
it very
from global warming.
Yes.
But
yes.
Once again, you can't just do it before telling the public. The public has to vote and give authorization, and then you do something like that.
Well, except they're saying, of course, that if it comes through the U.S. government, it's your representatives who are voting it in. You may have no knowledge about it, though. See, that's the thing. It'll be voted in by them, but we, the public, won't have enough information or say-so in its adaptation.
Yeah, I haven't seen any mainstream media coverage. I know NBC in Los Angeles had a pretty good report. It ran on the news in L.A., and then there was a front-page article in the Las Vegas Journal, and that author, that writer lost his job the next week.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah. But you can look it up in the Las Vegas Review. It made the front page. Big article of chemtrails over Las Vegas.
Really? Did he give, like, an unbiased version of it?
It was a very fair article. And he was fired, shortly thereafter. So once again, I think that's when that happens. The rest of the media says, "Well, we don't want to touch this story."
Right.
But it has made it through in a few cases.
Well, that's my hope. That, like you say, there was that one TV show that I think we both saw. That right? Did you see that one, Rob?
I saw the NBC one, which was very.
You saw it on air. Well, I saw it on the web. I saw it. Yeah.
Exactly, you get clips on the web because it only ran in Los Angeles. Sure.
Right, right. That was amazing.
I know. You never know. But of course, it's all over the internet. We live in such a strange society right now. There's stories that are covered in great detail on the internet, but are not in the newspapers and television.
Well, of course, we know why that is. Five corporations own the entire media, so there's, when you're talking about GE and Disney, and they're just not going to. First of all, GE has a lot of military. They make military. Yes, they make, military weapons.
Parts, right?
Yeah. So. They're behind it, in other words.
Right now, by the way, you have a television show, right? Where you talk about other issues.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
My show is called Mad as Hell TV. It plays in the Portland metro area. Right now I'm on break, but the show will be coming back this March with yet another show. This is my fifth show about weather and chemtrails with Scott Stevens, who is coming out with a book. And so when his book is being published is when we're going to have him back on and talk about he's going to connect the dots is what he's telling me.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need that. Now, George Noren, Coast to Coast, does cover this.
Yes, he does.
400 stations, so some radio outlets will cover it.
Right, and Jeff Rentz does as well, although Jeff Rentz was taken out of the Portland market.
He was on a radio station and high ratings, but was pulled, as was Clyde Lewis, correct? Right.
Yes, Clyde also talked about it.
Few minutes left. I just wanted. I know you do a lot of work with electronic voting and black box voting. I just thought maybe you could talk a little bit about that to our audience.
Well, that's just in a nutshell. People can check out black box voting. They can also read a very important book, which was written before black box voting, before the machines, even these latest electronic machines, came into play, and that's called Vote Scam. And they can check it out online at votescam.com, and they can read the first 8 chapters online at constitution.org. And they can order the book online. When you go to a bookstore, they'll tell you it's out of print. However, it's not. You can order the book, and I recommend it highly. It was an investigation, 25-year investigation, by two brothers who ran for office just to see what was involved in running for office.
Yeah.
And they found out it goes to the very highest echelons in our government, in our justice system, in our media, the vote scam. The vote is completely controlled and operated by the media, the justice system, and the government.
Now, when I first started voting, I mean, it was always paper ballots. I mean, what percentage of the country do you think still does paper ballots, or is it all electronic now?
I don't know. I know that the HIPAA Act, Help of America Vote Act, basically the purpose of that was to get electronic voting machines in every part of the country. And the reasons was some people just couldn't do the ballots correctly, you know, to help blind people and so on, handicapped
right.
people. That was their supposed reason. Though, as we know, the electronic voting is very suspect and has been, you know, investigated for fraud for the last, 8 years now.
Well, who owns the machines?
Well, that's something you need to look into. Who owns right. the machines is military contractors.
Right. So we
yeah.
don't know how they can be programmed, and we have no
yeah.
idea.
Yeah, and all the software is proprietary, they tell us. So even those in the elections officials cannot access the software.
And there's no paper trail.
There's no paper trail
for a recount.
Right. right.
So.
But I mean, I realize the voting machines are a huge issue, but even if the voting machines went away and they had paper trails for everything, you would still have vote fraud. So I just think people should read Vote Scam and find out the long and deep history involved in vote fraud in this country.
But just in a nutshell, how are they changing the votes during the actual election? What method are they using? Just not counting them correctly?
Not with the machines, you mean?
Yeah,
well,
how were they doing that in the
Well, they were doing it by basically they had workers. And by the way, these investigators who wrote the book got in with a camera, and they were kicked out, but they did get some footage of people randomly punching holes in the punch card voting paper voters. Yeah, paper, what do you call them? Paper vote. We've had vote by mail so long. The ballots, the paper ballots. They were randomly punching holes so that it was throwing the vote.
I see.
And they,
so the
once
people
they,
involved in the
people,
in
there
the,
were people involved. Now it's machines.
The volunteers.
Volunteers, but they were volunteers who were specially picked. And when these people, these two fellows, went in and videotaped this, they were quickly thrown out once they realized what they were videotaping.
Okay. So I've actually seen that.
Yeah.
It's pretty shocking
yes.
to see that. Well, we're at
yeah.
the end of our half hour. So any
All
last
right.
comments about chemtrails or black box voting?
Just to get people to start looking up. I notice a lot of people, when they look up, they don't really see. And
mm-hmm.
it took me a while. I'm not trying to criticize anyone. It took me a while to see it. But the more you look up, the more you analyze it for yourself, you'll
right.
see that your eyes don't lie to you. Contrails do not stop and start in the middle of the sky. They don't do that.
No.
They don't linger for hours and hours every single day at low levels, like 10,000 feet. That doesn't happen. Just start looking, using your eyes, and then start asking questions.
And finding alternative sources of news, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
You should do that anyway.
Where do you get your news online? Where do you like to go?
Oh, different sources. I mean,
whatreallyhappened.com or?
Whatreallyhappened.com is a good mm-hmm. source. Common Dreams, mm-hmm. The Independent from BBC, The Guardian.
Okay.
I go to Greg Palast. I mean, there's so many.
Absolutely.
All you have to do is
start.
Yep, you have to do a little work yourself.
Well, thank you for joining us, Courtney, with Mad
You're
Health
welcome.
Television in Portland. We'll talk another time. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was my friend Courtney Scott, really an involved person in her community, politically active, and really on top of a lot of these issues. So it's, like she said, it's really important to do your own research. And Greg Palast, she mentioned toward the end, has a great book called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And he actually ended up being a foreign reporter, you know, working outside the country, because he was just breaking too many real stories that the corporate media wouldn't touch. And he ended up being driven out of the country. But his book was a bestseller. You know, it's called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, a really great title. And he goes into these issues in detail as well. So anyway, I'll tell you a bit more about myself. My name is Mike Schultz, and we talk about a lot of unfiltered non-corporate news. And in the first segment of the show, and we get into ancient mysteries a lot. I have produced a few DVDs on this subject, and you can check them out at my website, fountainsofyouth.net. That's fountainsofyouth.net. Or just go to the BBS Radio main page and click on Odyssey, the name of my show, and all of the information and my full biography as to how I got involved in all of this, because I had a very traditional upbringing, raised in kind of suburbia, California, but, you know, there were little things that didn't add up if you just kind of watch the details and pay attention. As I was growing up, I stumbled into some high-level Freemasonry meetings that I didn't understand, and I saw a documentary called Chariots of the Gods about ancient mysteries, and there were clues along the way. So then as I became an adult, it's like I went back to those original clues and started unraveling the ball of yarn, and that's what I've laid out in my DVDs, this whole ancient astronaut theory of an advanced race of beings that used to be on this planet, used to interact with humans, and that was part of society back then. And the first DVD is called The Sands of Time, and the second one is The Temple of Stone. I've actually been working on the third one, and I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the newer topics I'm researching today. I want to talk a bit about obelisks today in Egypt. What an obelisk is, it's a very tall monument, and it was found throughout Egypt in ancient times. Some of them are over 100 feet high, some are over 120 feet high. They're very heavy. They can weigh 100 tons, 200 tons, 400 tons. One of them weighs over 1,000 tons. So the traditional theory of slaves and villagers carving them out in one giant stone block, lifting them up and moving them into place, doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. It's never really been demonstrated with these bigger, heavy obelisks. If you were to do it today, you would absolutely need cranes and machinery to move things in place. So we really have to look at advanced technology being used back at that time. So if you go to Egypt today, there are still 27 obelisks that remain around the Egyptian Delta. And one of them was never completed because there was a crack in it. It's called the Aswan Obelisk. And you can see it sitting there in the stone quarry. And they never finished carving it out. And how they would get underneath it and actually carve it is beyond me. I don't know. The official theory, once again, is that they used some copper tools, hand tools like chisels, and just doesn't make sense. The copper just kind of tends to bend and break when you try to slam it into that hard stone. So anyway, if you go online, of course, you can see pictures of obelisks, and if you ever get over to Egypt, you can visit these. And of course, the most famous one is in the city of Luxor in Egypt, and that one has all the elaborate carvings and hieroglyphics. So I believe that there was ancient technology involved in Egypt, and you know, I was reading about one of the researchers, Chris Dunn, who went over there, and he saw like holes being drilled in these areas, and it looked like a power drill. It had kind of that smooth incision and circular spiral that you see with a power drill, and that's what he saw left behind on some of these obelisks that were never finished, or some of the remnants. So that's a pretty key indicator to me that some type of machinery was used. And another thing I want to talk about is the Hall of Records, actually, which is supposedly this ancient library that is buried underneath the Great Pyramids of Giza somewhere. So it's a legendary myth. You know, nobody really knows if there is this ancient Hall of Records, but certainly Edgar Cayce did, he gave prophecies about it. And he said that it would be found at some point in the future underneath the front right paw of the Great Sphinx. And the Sphinx is, of course, you know, a half lion, half man. And what's interesting is that Graham Hancock, who is probably the best researcher in this whole field, I mean, if you wanted to go to one author, I would go to Graham Hancock and read his book. And he took some equipment where he could find out what's underground and take some measurements, and he did indeed find an empty chamber underneath the front paw of the Sphinx. Now, he tried to get under there and do some research and was denied privileges, of course. But I myself have seen photos of there's hallways and passages underneath the Sphinx. So there definitely are some tunnels under there. And it's very possible that there is this empty chamber. Now, what's supposed to be there is all of the lost records from the continent of Atlantis. That there's a theory that the Sphinx is very old. If you look at the sides, it has great weathering, very deep grooves that can only be caused by thousands of years of water and erosion like you would see in the Grand Canyon. So the theory is that it was built in 10,000 BC at the time of Atlantis, and that advanced society, you know, chose to put this marker there, and then in the Hall of Records leave behind all of their documents about their society. So, you know, there's something that's really interesting to investigate. And if any of you, of course, get a chance to go over there, some other good researchers are John West and Robert Schock. They also took seismic machines and detected this secret chamber underneath the Sphinx. So that's what I've been researching lately. And pretty soon we'll have Candia Sanders come on. She's an intuitive and always has a great metaphysical lesson or topic for us. Another topic I've been talking about lately, I've been giving lectures all around the country, up and down the coast, mostly on the West Coast. And if you're interested in having me come to your area in the U.S., please contact me through the Odyssey Radio Show. And we can set up a lecture and a great slideshow with all kinds of interesting photographs from around the world and all these ancient sites. So that would be really great. So just get in contact with me. But, of course, right now I lecture a lot in Portland, Vancouver, Seattle area. So I've been looking into the lost map of Atlantis. There's some very old maps that were in the Alexandria Library in Greece, and as many of you know, that famous library burned to the ground. And a lot of the religious fanatics of the day, this was a few hundred years after Christ, were burning a lot of old materials, and they burned down and destroyed the Alexandria Library in Greece. But a couple of the maps and books made it out of there or were transferred before the Great Fire. And one of them was a lost map of Atlantis. And it was found much later in the 1600s by a German priest, and his name was Kircher. And he was digging around in the Vatican Library and stumbled upon this map. And it had been brought over from Egypt to Italy. And he copied it very precisely, and it showed this large island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. It was about the size of France and Spain if you combined them. It was quite a large, almost like a small continent. I don't really want to say island. And there was a tall volcano in the middle of it, in the center, and that was known as Mount Atlas. And then there were six major rivers around it that flowed down to the sea. Now, the Greek philosopher Plato talked about Atlantis, and he gave a similar description. He talked about this tall volcanic island in the center and several large rivers flowing across down the land to the sea. And what Plato says is that all of a sudden there was a great catastrophe about 10,000 BC, and the island was submerged almost overnight. So that's, you know, one theory as to what happened to Atlantis. And you know, one theory is that it's an area near the Mediterranean in Greece. And then the other theory is that it's possibly Antarctica. It moved due to continental drift, and it's been covered with ice. And then the theory I'm leaning toward is that it was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, as this map depicts, and now it's traces of it drifted over to the Caribbean and Bimini, and that was what was found in the late 60s, was that Bimini Road, that little trace of Atlantis there. And that's what Edgar Cayce predicted. One thing that's interesting is Cayce and Plato described Atlantis as being populated by elephants. And this was kind of laughed at by scholars and sounded ridiculous, but in the 1960s, oceanographers were dredging the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean floor, and they did recover hundreds of elephant bones, which is pretty amazing. It provides, you know, a validation of the accounts of Plato and Casey that there may have been, you know, elephants and other large animals on this island, if it did indeed exist. So that's what I've been researching lately. I've been getting into Atlantis a lot, if it possibly existed, and the Hall of Records, you know, that were left behind, and the Egyptian obelisks. So that will be on my my next DVD, which will come out this year at some point. So there's been a lot of interesting topics in the news. One thing I didn't get to with Courtney was aspartame. A lot of you may not know this, but the state of New Mexico was trying to ban aspartame this past year. It really didn't make the corporate news, but it was a big story. There's a lot of research in it. It was only added to products in the 1980s, and the main person who was involved in adding it into soda pop and candy and gum and soft drinks was Donald Rumsfeld, who has managed the Iraq War for the past several years. Not anymore, but he did. He used to be involved in the soda industry as a consultant. And so aspartame, you know, it's a sweetener, but there's a lot of talk that, you know, this this chemical is dangerous, that it's causing a lot of health problems. And, you know, I personally shop at a health food store, so I don't think any of the products have aspartame in it. I know there's sodas without aspartame, but it's something that people, I hope, look into a bit more and become more aware of this issue. Because, once again, the state of New Mexico is debating whether they should ban it from all products from the shelves, which would be pretty amazing to have about half the products in the supermarket, you know, be banned overnight. So that's what's on the table. And, you know, it's a story you could look up online and find out more about. So aspartame and fluoride, we didn't get to talk much about fluoride either, but that's also an aluminum derivative. It's, you know, a metal. And there was, you know, fluoride wasn't always in our water. This was an additive that was added, you know, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, more and more city water supplies had fluoride added to it. And there's a lot of debate as to whether this is really beneficial or worth it, or if it's actually making the population a bit more docile and calming us down because of this long-term exposure to aluminum. And remember, when we talked about the chemtrails earlier in the program, we were talking about one of the main ingredients is the aluminum. So that's the same thing found in fluoride. Now, I've switched my toothpaste over to non-fluoride. Once again, if you go to health food stores, you can find several brands that don't have it. So, it, you know, you don't have to brush your teeth with fluoride. There are options. And I feel a lot better. I feel a lot sharper mentally. I don't quite feel as dull, and that's just an anecdotal evidence, but I've seen a shift or a difference. So, you know, the fluoride, it's not in Portland, actually. My understanding is one of the major cities that does not have fluoridated water is Portland, Oregon. But I do believe it's in most of the rest of the country. And many people have switched over to bottled water as well. And you have to call the company, actually, and find out the fluoride content in even bottled water to see if that's fluoridated or not. So these are, you know, I guess we're, you know, focusing on health issues today. But, you know, Courtney has been on this topic for years. And what's mind-blowing is if you go online on the computer, just how many websites there are on chemtrails and how many photographs there are. It just goes on for hours and hours. And it's really important to look at all these photos to see what a chemtrail looks like. I want to talk a bit about the sylphs. I didn't talk about this with Courtney. It's kind of more of a New Age metaphysical concept. But in my latest DVD, The Temples of Stone, I talk about sylphs. And what many of us believe is that there are elementals and, you know, fairies and sprites and spirits all throughout nature. and that the sylphs are the spirits of the sky. And there's photographs of them online. A good website is educate-yourself.org, educate-yourself.org, and you will see pictures of the sylphs. It's spelled S-Y-L-P-H-S. They generally look like animals, like origami, you know, seahorses, or birds, or peacocks, or cranes. And it sounds crazy. It sounds ridiculous. But I didn't believe it at all until I saw it. You know, I saw sylphs come across the sky and break up the chemtrails. That's what they do if you call them. If you call upon the sylphs, ask them to break up all of these artificial clouds that are being sprayed in the sky. I've seen them on many occasions.
They'll come over and break them all up. So anyway, that's something to look for. Candy, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Hi.
What's going on this morning?
Well, we were talking about chemtrails.
About what? I'm sorry?
Oh, about chemtrails. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's a little off today.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to hang up and let you take the rest of the show.
Oh, well, what a deal. Okay, well, I hope you had a great morning. And I will be more than happy to, because, it just seems like we're having a little reverb going on.
Okay, you got about 10, 15 minutes.
Okay, great.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks
a lot. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed Mike this morning on Odyssey here at BBS Radio. I'm sure he had a great show. Sometimes we don't always get on at the same time, and so I don't know exactly where he was. I will go into, of course, what's been going on in my world. As you know, Mike and I have totally different points of interest, and yet we can always come together, which is really fun. What we do, in essence, is sometimes similar, and yet it's different. That's what makes it really fun. I work with clients and on a regular basis, and I work with clients from all over, and what's so much fun is that we usually go into cycles and what's going on in a client's life over, you know, the last couple of weeks usually is somehow reflected in mine, so it's always fun. Well, the thought that I was going to go into this morning was I had a conversation which doesn't really reflect my life other than observations and judgments. I think that we all have that within us, is to go into judgment. It's really difficult not to. However, it's one of those things I think we really need to work on a regular basis, is to look at how we judge others, because in reality we're only judging ourselves. If we are nicer to ourselves, of course, then we're nicer to others. It's one of those things. Well, the client that I was dealing with yesterday, gentleman, wonderful man, and we got into, you know, he's later in his life, and yet he still felt, what am I going to do when I grow up? Here he's developed two companies, very successful companies, and is wanting to go on to the next level, the next step with his life. Everybody's suggesting that he retire. He doesn't want to retire. Well, we got into talking about jumping in and being excited about things again, because it's real easy to go into complacency. So you get into really thinking about and sitting with that concept in your life, no matter where you are, not going into complacency, going into what makes you excited. Because whatever makes you excited, usually you can turn it around and put it into where you're making financial gain from it as well. I mean, look at what Don has done here with BBS Radio. He had a passion, and he created a radio network for those of us like us who want to get out and speak about what's important on our plates at the moment. How awesome is that? You can do that as well. That's what I talked to this gentleman about. Again, I know I started off with judgment, but I'll get there eventually. But that's a great place to start in your life, is to really look at exactly what it is that you want to create in your life, and not to get into complacency. And it doesn't matter where you are in the spectrum of age, is to really embrace the fact that we're on the planet and it's about having fun. I mean, yeah, drama too, but fun, having fun, put that as your middle name. Anyway, the point of where I was going with him is throughout the, you know, we talked about him, and then later on he wanted to get into relationships. And it turns out that his middle child is gay. And as an older gentleman, that has been a real challenge for him. He adores him. He loves him. He supports him 100%. However, there have been moments in his life when it's been very difficult for him to wrap his mind, his imagery, his beliefs around being gay. And I thought it was a really good topic because it goes back into one's judgments on other people, but also from a higher point of view, a metaphysical point of view, from my perspective on those who have chosen to be gay, there are multitudes of reasons. One, of course, I have seen with people that have chosen that. I mean, obviously it's not an easy choice because you are going to have to live with a lot of judgment, and that really pushes that person to stretch their own inner belief in themselves, which is a tough journey, and yet one of which that creates and grows more compassion and more ability to look at life in a new perspective. I think from my view, all of us have experienced that at one point in time on the time grid. I believe we've all experienced that because it doesn't matter what type of body you're in or what kind of relationship you choose. The bottom line, love is love. But what he wanted to understand is why. And so we got into the different levels. I worked with people that were raped and abused as children that then opted to stay with a safer sex, so to speak, women that have been abused and then have chosen to move into women because it's safe. Some choose to eventually go back to men. Some never heal enough to do that. I've also seen with young men that were abused that never felt worthy enough to go to a woman that chose to stay with the same sex. Again, from the big picture, it's all about growth of the emotional body, the emotional being. And then the other one is, in the case of his son, was that he had had at least 5 different lifetimes of being what I would say on the pendulum swing pretty far to the right of the heavy dose of testosterone, where he was out in essence being a bully, being very, very arrogant and judgmental, and would be very, overly, you know, brutal, killing, maiming, judging. And so he opted then to come in the male body, but from a perspective of feminine energy, which is wonderful. You know, it's interesting. The other bit of information I got yesterday from this was, you know, so many people say, well, we've got more gays on the planet today. You know, on one level perhaps, but I think it's also because we are much more aware and much more cognizant and empathetic, which is a real positive thing. But the other piece that I got, I feel that another reason that we have an influx of males that have feminine energy is that they are helping to help shift us into this feminine matrix, and they're doing it from a male perspective because we are, in essence, shifting from the old paradigm of male masculine energy into the feminine energy. And what better place to do it too, to help hold that vibration, help move us into this next level, than from the perspective of a man who's experienced very heavy, heavy, again, for lack of a better word, testosterone-driven lifetimes of brutality, and moving then into still in the male energy, but bringing in this feminine, wonderful, loving, compassionate part of them into their being, and coming to help hold that into the vibration of the planet. So I had never thought about that yesterday, and I, in essence, picked that up from this gentleman's son yesterday. I thought, oh, isn't that a beautiful way of looking at it? And it made him feel good because, again, he's older, and he's had to deal with, of course, people making gay jokes and things like that, and having to shift his perspective on what is acceptable and morality and all of those other issues that we've been labeled with throughout the centuries. So to me, it was a real fascinating way of looking at it, again, by holding this feminine matrix and energy on the planet, which I thought was just beautiful. It's a great piece of information. And so I thought, I'm going to share that because we all have friends that are gay or someone in our family. And again, it's holding that feminine vibration. Or, and the other reverse, of course, are the women that have had to hold on to the male energy. And again, they are bringing in it the male energy and softening it as well. So to me, it's a real positive shift. I think it's a really great way of looking at how we are shifting the whole planet and the vibration. With those words, I want to thank everybody for listening to Mike this morning on Odyssey, and then joining me here, Candia Sanders, at the final bit of Odyssey today. You can listen to our show again tonight at 9 p.m. Please stay tuned and listen to the other great shows on BBS Radio. Don's got a list a mile long of some incredible talent to learn from. And we look forward to having you join us again next week here at Odyssey at 9 a.m. and as well in the evening. And with those words, have a fabulous week and weekend, and be happy. Be well.